Okay. Hi, sorry for the technical hiccup, but after all, it is about technology. I want to bring the notion of technology onto the body. I mean, we've obviously done this already in both the first talks. So I'd like to do together this text scores. So to make your hands, if you would like to. You don't have to participate, but it helps. Into two cup shapes. Bring them over your ears and listen. What do you hear? Do you hear your ears or do you hear your hands? So that's my starting point for considering the technology of listening, technology of orality. What is the technology? Is it our ears or is it our cupped hands? Or is actually the sound that we hear a conduit that is created between the ears and the hands and something that goes through? What do we really hear? And does what can we talk about and understand as a sonic episteme, as a sonic knowledge and a sonic sense? The great paradox of sound is, of course, that the more we focus in on it, the more we try to figure out what it is, the more we realize that it isn't something in the conventional sense of an object or that we know what it is. It doesn't fulfill all the criteria of the lexica. It isn't this or that. It isn't the hands or the ears. It isn't the chair or the table. It is their relationship and is their in between. It is what they do together. And even that, it is without any certainty. It is very unreliably that thing in between. We're not quite sure. And in that sense, maybe it is a conduit. And it's not even a conduit as a noun, but it is conduit as a verb. It is conduire, which is the French verb for to drive. So it's driving. It is not driving. It moves. It moves through. It is in motion. And it moves through the concave shapes of my cupped hands and the eardrum and the air and everything else that is around it at that moment. And in that sense, it is entirely contingent. And it is relational, and it does something. It is something that does something. It is, as verb, a noun that is an unstable contact, an unreliable connection that sounds things together and with each other. And I find that a very interesting starting point, and interesting, I think it links so very well, particularly to Michael's idea that the history he presented to us is really a history about the connections rather than the history of things. Of course, it literally hits things on the way through the connections, but it is about the conduire. It's about the driving through and the moving through. There are various ways which philosophically I sort of try and grasp this, because of course, if we want to bring this conduire, this conduit into scientific knowledge and make a sonic episteme, we need to somehow grasp it. We need to grasp it, its technology, its language, how we can deal with it. So on the one hand, for example, we could talk about it through Boris Merleau-Ponty's idea of the honey, which I very like. He's a phenomenologist, so his idea of honey as a liquid moving thing that has no certain form, but it grasps you as you're trying to sort of take it out of the honey pot. It grasps you as much as you grasp it, but it doesn't have a stable form and it sort of moves back into another form. I think that is one imagination with which this unstable, unreliable connections I can imagine. On the other hand, of course, we can just go to sound itself and play Toshio Tsunoda. Briefly, only a piece that's very helpfully called Unstable Contact from his album Decaclomania. The light miraculously switched off. How can I make it switch on again? Is there a trick? Great, fantastic, thank you. So this is another way to listen, this instability of the contact in his work. This particular work is with vibration plates, sine waves and bottles. And what we hear is literally the movement, the conduit in between. Or we can also consider it through the beating of eggs, which sounds the motion of hitting a liquid into a firm shape. It sounds not the beating nor the egg, but the chiming of the metal hitting metal through nothingness until the nothingness offers some resistance. If you've beaten eggs, you know, and they get sort of stiff and stiff, and in the end you can turn it round, and it's a real thing. The sonic resistance of viscous foam cushioning itself, rigorously sounding what it beats, it slowly changes sound, producing a sonic tautology, the materiality of ephemeral fluff. And I find this technology of the beating of egg, which is the whisker, is also a technology, another kind of useful way to try to imagine this thing that sound is within the discourses and languages we have available, to bring it into what it can be as knowledge, how we can grasp it as knowledge, how we can talk about it and have it present in there. So this sonority gives access to the viscid connection between things, gives access to the viscid connection that I understand sound to be making. And together it produces an indivisible volume, because once you've beaten that egg, you can't really divide this mass so well anymore. There isn't a, it's sort of stuck together, and it's contingently together. And this idea of volume I also find useful, so that we don't think about this room as a room in relation to walls and windows and the ceiling and the floor, but actually this is the volume we are making together. It's the hum of the technology, my voice, later your voice in conversation, the creaks and everything that happens in here, that it doesn't create an architectural space, but an indivisible volume in which we are together contingently, and we negotiate this space together. So this volume that is achieved through the beating of egg and that we can hear in an indivisible sound, is not the measure of decibels, but it's an ephemeral expanse of things sounding together without semantic meaning or a lexical referent necessarily, but in between of them, in between their making, our own making, if we all make sounds together. It makes a voluminous expand that is sort of has, of course, a relationship to the architecture you're in, because that affects how reverberant, for example, a sound is. So it does relate to that architectural context, but it also has an agency of how it performs that architectural context and how we are together within it. So this sonic contact and volume is entirely ephemeral, but it is very physical, as we noticed. There is something very physical about it, the grasping honey, the beaten egg, our cupped hands over our ears. And it is the place from which we experience the world and ourselves in that world, where we can contemplate and enact the connections, misses and happenstance that is a sonic sensibility and the sonic episteme of the world. The way we can think through such things as the sound of bullets from the factory to the hospital, and what that means economically, what it means ecologically, because essentially such a volume performs a codependence, all our codependence, what we are together rather than what we are apart. It is a cosmopolitanism, if you will, a sonic cosmopolitanism, and the notion of interbeing. So, but still, we haven't, and I won't today, entirely grasp, of course, but I can ask the question again, what is the episteme of sound? What is this sonic knowledge? And what technologies do we need to make it accessible and to make it communicable? I talked earlier via the beating of eggs of the sonority. We have Jean-Luc Nancy, for example, who sees it as a secret that we can access when we are according to listening. We have Helen Zixou, for whom I believe, and I related to that, I think we could use her to come to a feminine sonic sense as the excess and the overflow of a patriarchal meaning, where the body and flesh is in the mix and is considered rather than a semantic language that is at a distance, or an objectivity that implies a distance rather than a responsibility and the being with. So her feminine sense as a sonico-feminine sense of the unsecured and the unstable that is celebrated as a future sense. And from that way, we can also go to Son Ra and Kodwo Eshun, a turn other sonic Afrofuturists who talk and write about Afrofuturism through the sonic and through music, where the technology is used and sound is heard as a pathway to a different future that comes from a different planet, from somewhere else. Or we could also go to Adriana Cavarero, for example, who considers the unstable as that which breaks the muteness of a Western philosophy, where the breath, the sounds, the body is reintroduced into a Platonic and paternal thought structure that goes along on a horizontal line. And the works don't just make sense in a grammatical order, but where they make sense also through the vertical and through the making of sounds rather than the making of grammar. And I feel confident also for this project of getting to the sonic episteme and getting to a sonic knowledge, to borrow from Donna Haraway and Karen Barad the idea of diffraction and interactivity. For the imagination of sound senses the patterns of interference, where difference is not that, so it's not this or that, what we started with in the beginning, the hands and the ear, the chair and the table, but where it is the effects of the interaction within, I would like to say, in this voluminous space of sound, in this indivisible space in which we are all codependent, where none of us is alone or singular, but where it is about how we interact, how we work and live together, and everything we do has a consequence on something else. Nothing exists in a vacuum. I work on these philosophical and linguistic possibilities because I'm sort of driven, if you will, by a kind of will to articulate what is the understanding we can get through to sound. Possibly very much like the man with his whistle, who was very excited about, if I was a dog, you know, what could I hear then? And what other world would open itself up to me? And away from the dog, but maybe into a political and a feminist and an aesthetic desire to hear other sonic possible worlds, other layers that aren't accessible. They might be accessible within my own physiological accessibility, but maybe I need other technologies, or I also need another sensibility, another approach, another attitude, another way of understanding the world through the connections rather than through this and that, to come to challenge a conventional epistemology and its values and norms, which is very much based on what things are, and to look more for that unstable in between the connections, the unreliable connections, and what they are else. The technology is somewhere in there. It's maybe not as apparent as it could be, but we're getting there. So to do this work, you know, that is where I get back to the cupped hands on our ears and the song, because how do we reach and legitimize this sense? How do we talk it? How do we say it? How do we speak it? And how do we bring its research and its knowledge to science, geographical, architectural, scientific, technological, historical, musicological, etc., when we're not actually even sure what we're hearing, whether it's the cupped hands or the ear? How do we deal with that when we're not sure what it is? And as an artist, of course, I'm very happy to be in the unstable and the unreliable, and I have no need to know what it is. But if I want to take part in a scientific discourse, I have to at least pretend some certainty here. And this is what I'm working on, with the purchase listening across disciplines, which I'm bringing in here, because I think there is an overlap between the philosophical consideration and artistic practice and an actual research project. Listening across discipline is a research project I do together with a biomedical acoustic engineer, Professor Anna Barney from Southampton, and Mark Peter Wright, who is a sound artist, field recordist, phonographer. And we are basically researching exactly how do different disciplines listen, what technologies do they use, what are the scientific protocols, the vocabularies that are engaged to stabilize listening enough so it can be a legitimate partner in scientific discourse, but not too much so it can keep its unreliability and we can still hear itself, the connection. We can still enjoy the unstable and work with the unstable and not sort of defer it onto a referent, defer it onto language. And so, and the question is often on what do we hear, the technologies, the spectrograms. And so I can show you this, and we could say, well, let's try and sing this. You know, let's try and sing it, and what would we sing if we try and sing the spectrogram? What could it possibly be? What is this? And science has a lot of faith in these things. I mean, this is where truth lies. This is where things work, not in sound, but in that. And we're not going to sing it now. I don't think we have time to sing it, because that is actually what it is. So it's a lung sound, but obviously of somebody who is not so well. It hopefully wouldn't be your lung sound. But it's sort of interesting that that has a real value, whereas that sample of a lung sound has to be legitimized through this. And I'm not saying we shouldn't look at that, but I'm saying there is something to be had also in the lung sound itself and how we access that. It might mean touching the patient's body, which is already another bit of information we gain, putting a stethoscope on, working directly there. The next bit I want to play is from one of the... I mean, why it is interesting is obviously because Professor Anna Barney, she works with people with lung and breathing difficulties. And before we started the project, she would work either from samples or from spectrograms. And since we've been working together, she's made a point of going, seeing patients, touching patients. And we have often talked about the difference, what the difference means in the between that she's creating, and what is the technology of the touch, and how can that be integrated into the knowledge that then is legitimate and she gets money for, and that can find its way back into the NHS. I'm going to be really quick now. But we've also, here's a stethoscope. Another partner is Debbie Thackeray, who works with auscultation. And it's very interesting. There is technology, and then there is training. What are we trained to hear? And I just want to play this very...
So they're creating a picture, a mental picture of where the lungs are before you then teach them, okay, now you know where the lungs are. You now need to take your stethoscope, and what you do is you're listening to the... You'll start on the left-hand side, the left upper lobe. You're going to listen. You have to teach them how to instruct the patient to breathe whilst they're using the stethoscope. And then it's a very set pattern of you compare the left to the right. I've got a picture here, which just for your... interest, this is actually from a marking sheet. So we would actually teach the students to begin on the left-hand side compared to the right-hand side. 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 And we do that anteriorly, and we do it posteriorly. And all of these places you can see on this diagram are actually the lobes of the lungs that we're...
So in auscultation, there's a very clear system of how you learn to hear, what you listen out for. And these stethoscopes are very interesting because they come with little patches that you can put onto a body. So the problem is, how do you get to hear an ill patient? Ill patients don't necessarily want to come to the university and be prodded by students. And this stethoscope comes with little plasters you put on your well peers. And so you can still fake that there is a crackle up in the upper lobe and there is an illness in the bottom lobe and so on. And so they practice this listening. So that as well, entrainment, tonic pedagogy, the learning of is another technology. So from cupping our ears, there is language, how we grasp it, how we think it, the technologies and how we grasp it, how we think it, and the training of how we grasp it and we think it. And, of course, that itself then feeds into vocabularies and values. And I think it is important that on this whole path we don't lose the sound and its knowledge, even if it is sometimes resistant to making sense.